custody at Norcor, a jail in the Dalles, receive harsh discipline, including solitary confinement, for infractions such as asking what time it is or for just looking around. These kids are as young as 12 years old. Other states are reducing child incarceration. Why not Oregon? Join us on Prison Pipeline, February 5th at 6:30 p.m.
Have you heard?
KVU hosts beloved community and action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. right here at the radio station. On February 15th, we'll show the film Real Injun, a Canadian documentary film that explores the portrayal of Native Americans in film. Real Injun is illustrated with excerpts from classic and contemporary portrayals of Native people in Hollywood movies and interviews with filmmakers, actors, and historians. Again, that's a screening of Real Injun for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action Movie Night on Thursday, February 15th at 7 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock a.m. on the first Friday, meaning coming up is Pacific Underground, looking at what the Lunar New Year means to different sections, segments, sectors of the API community. At 10, Valley View speaks to Taryn Bazurto to see what the Corvallis chapter of Indivisible is up to. We're going to finish out the hour with Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 10, a Radio Geekly. As KBOO turns 50, the ARG Collective talks about the other geekly things that are also turning 50 this year. That's all on KBOO, which is your independent source for news and entertainment. And you can be a member of the KBOO Foundation at kboo.fm. You click on the little maroon rectangle with the yellow letters that spell the word donate. That's all coming up now.
What's up, Radio Land? You are listening to Pacific Underground. I'm Jenna Young, and I am joined today with Tabitha and Jake. Everybody say hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so, right, we're the API show, mm-hmm. and we are now going to talk about Lunar New Year.
Big
which
deal.
For, yes, many an Asian community, it's like, oh my gosh, it's coming up, da da da, we're gonna party and lie and dance and mahjong.
Red envelopes, wearing red, fireworks.
Yeah, there's all sorts of excitement going on. But then, you know, for other people in the API community, it's like, oh, Lunar New Year's coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really know much about that.
So, my country doesn't celebrate that. Or it's like, oh, I used to celebrate that as a kid, but now it's just not important. It is, you know, as all things wrapped up complex fields.
We're going to unpack and dissect why people celebrate the Lunar New Year.
Or why they don't,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's, because it's really interesting. So what we did is we put a call out to you, our listeners, and we asked people to share what the Lunar New Year means or doesn't mean to them or just some memories. And so that's what we're doing today. We're going to be sharing stories by you. And one of our first stories that we have is from Elena's mom. Elena is a former member of the Pacific Underground Collective. She now lives all the way out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Elena. Thanks for sending us something.
Why did she have to move?
I know. But this way, we get to hear stories from Albuquerque, New Mexico, from Elena's mom, who shared what it was like for her when she was growing up with Lunar New Year.
Hi, Pacific Underground. This is Elena out here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's been a while. Hi, I'm here with my mom, Virginia. She's going to say hi.
Hello.
Do you want to say your Chinese name too?
Ying Wei Qing.
And we're just answering the question, what does Lunar New Year mean to you? So, yeah, mom, what was Lunar New Year like growing up for you?
big excitement as a kid. We did have to do a lot of housekeeping beforehand to clean out the old and getting ready to greet the new. And we were very excited, the little kids, to get these red envelopes with money inside from our older relatives. And then we had several days off from school, so that in our family, we didn't have distant relatives travel to visit us, but all over the whole island of Taiwan, people were traveling to see their extended families. And on the day of the new year, we would go to our aunt's house. She had the biggest house, and all the kids would spend most of the day playing outside and then eating all kinds of food, just really good food, and we were excited about that too. And into the night, everybody would sit outside and watch fireworks, which sometimes scared me. And then we actually, the kids would even play with, set off the smaller fireworks, although I was kind of afraid of them at the time. And let me think of anything else. We all had new clothes and shoes for the new year. And we were happy about that, too. So the new clothes, lots of food, and the red envelope with the money were all things that all the kids were excited about. And I think that's about all I can remember right now. Thanks. Bye.
Wait, one more question. Did you keep celebrating once you moved to the United States at all?
Yes, our family still would mark the day by going to a Chinese restaurant, usually, because we ended up in a place where we didn't have any relatives, but we did have Chinese restaurants to go to. That's it.
Okay, thanks. That was my mom, Virginia, and me, Elena, out here in New Mexico. Bye.
I love that.
Oh, I miss Elena. It's nice to hear her voice again.
My favorite part of that is when, in the middle of it, her mom's like, okay, bye.
I know.
It's like, okay, we're done with this interview. I love that one just because it's a description of what her mom went through, you know, like in Taiwan. And she has, to me, what I have always understood is the very, like, traditional, kind of typical, what we think of as Chinese New Year, right? Like going to your family's house, red envelopes. That was like the part I was really jealous about growing up because I'm not Chinese. And so I would watch my friends get the red envelopes and they would buy some like mad things with them. I was like so jealous. Tabitha, did you get the red envelopes
growing
up? Oh,
yes. And I still get the red envelopes.
What, you still get them? Oh, look at that. You made like Jake like sneeze in surprise. Like, ooh. We can still get those sorts of things. Oh my God.
I don't get nearly as much money as I used to because I'm older. I have a job. But my aunt still gives me a red envelope, and my grandmother still gives me a red envelope. And I have an aunt in Chile, and sometimes if she's in the States, she'll also give me a red envelope, and so I'll still make some money.
Do you have like children in your family that are nearby?
No.
So are you still then one of the youngest people in your family?
I am still one of the youngest people, so I guess you could say. I also have a cousin that still lives in Oregon. And I guess you could say we are kind of spoiled that we still get red envelopes.
Okay, so if there were, okay, let's go into the hypotheticals. If there was, say, like some children in your family that were like, you know, small children, or just people who were younger than you, would you be giving the red envelopes?
I don't think my family would expect me to, but I would. There would only probably be like $5-$10 in there, but I probably would as a way of carrying on the tradition because I just grew up with it here in the States, so I didn't celebrate it quite the same way Elena's mom did, but I just remember it being such an integral part of my family's celebrations and our gatherings that I definitely want to carry it on. And so if I had like younger nephews and nieces nearby, I would probably give them a red envelope. I don't cook, so I probably wouldn't make any Chinese food, but I would order takeout. Still probably ask that everyone wears red. And And the one bit of Chinese that I still remember is how to say Happy New Year. Oh gosh. And now that I'm on the spot, I'm suddenly drawing a blank.
I always heard it as, okay, all people get ready to call in and yell at me. But I always remember it was something like Gong Hei Fa Choi.
Oh, that is the Cantonese way.
Oh, that's Cantonese. Okay.
And my family, and now that you said it, it did, I remember it.
See, my terrible Cantonese. She's like, oh, we got it. That inspires me to remember.
Yeah. Xin Nian Kuai Le.
Ah, okay.
Though some Chinese person will probably, oh my gosh, she has such terrible pronunciation. And yeah, and now I'm also imagining like someone's gonna call and it's like both of you are saying it wrong.
I know. Well, I tried, sorry. And I apologize. Well, so that was you growing up in Salem, right? Mm-hmm. Here in Oregon, and we actually have another clip from somebody else who also grew up here in Oregon.
Oh, no, he grew up in Boston.
What? Oh, okay, so that's what I get from his recording. He says he's in Portland now. So this is Vincent, who lives in Portland now, but you're saying that he grew up
in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's this next clip from Vincent, who shares his memories of what it was like to grow up with Lunar New Year.
Yo, this is Vincent from Portland, Oregon. When I was little, all my relatives would gather at my grandmother's house in Flushing, New York. We would eat mountains of my uncle's spring rolls, soy sauce chicken, bao, and of course there was dim sum too. The adults would pass out lycee to the little kids. Those are those red lucky envelopes. We would play marathon games of mahjong. I'm talking like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. for 2 days. My grandmother was 95 years old, and she would wreck all of us at MJ.
Thank you, Vincent.
Yeah, I enjoy that a part of the get-together is like people playing games, like playing mahjong and gambling.
Mm-hmm. And once again, I think Lai Si is the Cantonese pronunciation because I grew up calling it Hongbao, which literally translates to like red pouch. That's the red envelope that you get your money in.
So for people who don't maybe know the tradition of it, for like your family, how is the red pouches? Like, right? It's not just like somebody just like putting it under your pillow or something like that. Like, did you have a tradition to it?
Mm-hmm. So there was always a ceremony that my family would first gather for a big meal. My grandmother would make... I can't remember the name of it, but the translation means golden bars because in China, you want to start the new year with lots of prosperity and good luck. And so that's why people wear red, because red is a lucky color in China. And you want to have all these things and all these foods that symbolize prosperity, long life, good fortune. And so you get golden bars. And I can't remember what they symbolize, but it's like this a bun, and I unfortunately can't remember what it means. But after dinner, then all the kids would line up, and all the elders would line up, and then all the kids would go down the line, bowing, saying "Xin Nian Kuai Le" to all the elders, bow, and then the elders would bow back, and then give the red envelope, and just down the line. And then I remember like sitting with my sibling and cousins, like counting our money, and then my mom would. Let me keep like $50 or 100 of it, but then the rest had to be deposited in the bank. Mm. So,
dang, so you're making some serious like change when you're a kid.
Yeah. My mom told me it was for college, and I'm kind of not sure how much of it actually did pay for my college because my mom kept track of my bank account until I was 18. Yeah, I do appreciate my mom that she made me save it rather than blowing it on a game console or new clothes or something.
Like Jake,
Pokemon cards.
Oh, Pokemon.
Jake is wanting to ask you because you had mentioned that you didn't really grow up with Lunar New Year, but were you aware of Lunar New Year when you were growing up?
No, not really.
Really?
There wasn't a big like Chinese or community that celebrated it that I knew personally in my circles. So I didn't actually experience it until I was 21 and joined the Pan Asian Club at college.
Oh, really? Was it like, what is this? I mean, had you never seen like just like on TV like Chinese lion dance or any of the.
Maybe on some of the like Jackie Chan movies I watched as a teenager, but like again, I didn't really come to that until late in life. That wasn't something that like I grew up with at all.
Okay.
So it was very interesting to me to sort of like see it as an adult more. And I was just like, whoa, this has been a thing for a long time. Apparently.
It's just been around for a little bit. Well, we have another story from someone who is local, Sun Lee. Sun Lee, who is a fellow volunteer here at KBOO Community Radio here in Portland. And Sun Lee was generous enough to sit down with me the other day and to describe what it was like for him to grow up here in Oregon as a Korean American and having to kind of do these rituals just like within his family and within his little bubble. So let's hear from Sun.
My name is Sun. I am first generation Korean in the United States. And growing up for, I guess, what I would call Korean Lunar New Year, which I think is also known as Solnal, there were a lot of different things that we did. I grew up in a very traditional household. And one of the first things all the kids or the younger people would need to do is you always show respect to your elders, and that would require you to bow three times in front of them while they sat there. Then I think they would give you bits of wisdom. But the main thing as a child was you get a little envelope with crisp $1 bills in it. And so that was great, which I think one year as I got older, I got like a $20 bill maybe. I'm not sure. Another tradition that we had during this day would be there's a portion of the day where you show your respects to your ancestors and the people who have deceased in the family. And what you do is you clear out a room, you set up one of these low wooden Asian style tables, and then you fill that table with little plates of food, typically dried fruits, dried fish, fresh fruits, these little things called jeon, which is sometimes like slices of vegetable that are battered and fried, a soup, bowl of rice, and then during this portion, everyone in the family would gather around. You would also bow, and then there's some other rituals that you would do. But then once that portion is finished, everyone leaves the room, and you crack a door open that leads to the outside so the spirits can come in. And then you just hang around for about 5 minutes drinking water or whatever. And then after about 5 minutes before entering the room, somebody would always cough to let the spirits know that you're coming back in. And then everyone in the family would eat something off the table. The other thing that I remember is there's a traditional soup that you eat on Korean New Year, which is called tteokguk. It's basically a rice cake soup. And I think it signifies that you're getting a year older. And then there would be these games that people would play throughout the day. One would be like this Korean style of poker. Another would be this game called Yutnori, which you would use these four sticks and you play on this game board. I think they're typically gambling games, but it's basically an all-day affair, which for the most part, those are the main points that I remember.
So much gambling on Lunar New Year.
I know, I love it. Because it's like, you're gambling with your family.
Yeah.
And so that is like, okay, that's nice. At least you're not like going out to a casino. But we all know that gambling with your family,
that can get bloody.
Yeah, man. Woo-hoo-hoo. But you know, while that was playing, Tabitha said something funny like, what'd you say?
I didn't. It was really nice to hear a Korean celebration of this one family's Lunar New Year celebrations, because it kind of blew my mind in my 20s when I learned that other Asian communities and people celebrated Lunar New Year, because I just celebrated with my family, and the API community is very small in Salem, so I felt very isolated, and I always grew up calling it Chinese New Year and celebrating it with my Chinese family or my Chinese community. So I thought it was just a strictly Chinese celebration. And then, yeah, and I guess like you, Jake, that learning that, oh, other Asian people and communities celebrate Chinese New Year? Oh, I guess I shouldn't call it Chinese New Year anymore.
Yeah, okay, it's like when I was a kid, right, yeah, I thought of it as Chinese New Year. I didn't even understand as a very small child that it was connected to a lunar calendar. I just thought that, like, Chinese people had their own calendar, and so this is when they celebrated New Year's. And it's like, I knew Korean people that also celebrated, but I guess I never really spoke to them about it, because I didn't get aware until I was probably maybe like a teenager in like high school, and I came to have Korean friends and like Vietnamese friends, and they were calling it Lunar New Year, and they had similar traditions, just like Sun was describing. You know, the Korean traditions are, when you hear them, Tabitha, it's not like, oh, that's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And then when they're like, oh yeah, I celebrate Chinese New Year too, okay, it blew my mind, because I was like, but you're Korean, why would you celebrate Chinese New Year? Like, we just call it Lunar New Year. It's like, oh, it all makes so much sense.
Yeah, I'd always just heard it called Asian New Year or Lunar New Year.
No, I've never heard it called Asian New Year.
It was slightly watered down version, but like it felt, it tried to be inclusive of all the sort of different, you know, cultures. And I didn't realize until recently that I thought it was just sort of like East Asian cultures, but apparently in a lot of the Southeast Asian countries, they have a similar celebration.
Mm-hmm. What did your college do? Was there an Asian affinity group that put on a Lunar New Year celebration? What did they do?
The Asian American Student Association that was the big cultural show of the year that a lot of planning went into. And so there would be, you know, sometimes Filipino dances, like lion dance, you know, fan dance kind of stuff. And there was a lot of different foods from Asian, you know, Asian American students abroad, or restaurants catered, and that was one of the things that I, you know, did a lot of participated and organized in when I was there. So
I'm curious, was there ever any, I don't know, resentment or resistance to celebrating the Lunar New Year from API communities that don't have a tradition of this? And were there ever critical voices that were like, well, this isn't part of our tradition, so why are we celebrating this?
Maybe in places that had larger Asian communities, but, you know, in Vanderbilt, in the school that I went to, the community was so small, it was just sort of like kind of a survival method to just come together over something and just, you know, have a celebration that everybody could try to be represented at. And
where is Vanderbilt again?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, there was a Chinese community and, you know, Filipino community and a few other, you know, local groups, but it's mostly students, some international students, people who are like much closer to the culture, you know, and sometimes you'd have second or third generation kids too, so.
Well, that's a good segue to our next voice, which is Justin Chin, who lives out in La Grande, Oregon.
And was recently on Pacific Underground.
Yeah.
To talk about
good
what
episode.
It is to live in East Oregon. Eastern Oregon is its own experience, if you don't know.
And things that the API community does there to organize to
And I bond. Thought I was isolated in Idaho. It sounds much, you know, thinner on the ground than in Eastern Oregon.
Yeah, so Justin Chin holding it down over there in Eastern Oregon. Let's hear what he has to say.
This is Justin Chin in La Grande, Oregon. When I was a little kid, I was always look forward to Lunar New Year just for the red Lucky Money envelopes from my grandma, my aunt and uncle, and my mom and dad. I would especially look forward to the envelopes that my grandma would send from Hong Kong and think that she was right there in the room with me as I would open those envelopes and be smelled and be filled with all the smells of what I would imagine Hong Kong was 9 and 10 years old. Now as an adult, I look forward to spending time with my friends here in Eastern Oregon and making the best of what we can here away from our families and building a small API community. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Justin. It's interesting how, like, as you're saying, Jake, with when you have such a small, isolated community, that the kind of pan-Asian thing comes together often around New Year's, mm-hmm. right? And that it's a way to come together, go to Chinese restaurants, which, oh, man, that's a whole thing, right? Like, because of Chinese restaurants and, you know, its popularity in the United States and, you know, there in the 1950s and people going, like, to kind of fake Chinese food but also finding connection with it. I'm sure there's, like, somebody who has that awesome thesis about the connection between the two.
Yeah. But I'm also getting so hungry just listening to everyone talk about the amount of food and the kinds of food that they ate during Chinese New Year.
See,
right there, that's an example for me how I just still associate it with, like, calling it Chinese New Year instead of Lunar New Year.
Yeah.
It's just so ingrained in my mind that it's Chinese New Year.
Well, it's funny. Because of prepping for this show, I was wondering about, you know, other cultures celebrating it and just like my own. Because I didn't learn and, like, even really think about it until, like, my mid to late 20s about why Japan might have celebrated Lunar New Year. I mean, they do it on January 1st. And it never had, like, dawned on me that it was celebrated on a different day before, right? Mm-hmm. Before they adopted the, like, European, like, Western calendar. And so I called my dad. And I was like, okay, so, Dad, do you remember ever celebrating, not necessarily Lunar New Year, but did you guys do a lunar calendar, like, recognition day or something like that? And, you know, my dad was born, like, 1948, right? So right after war. And Japan had already adopted the Western calendar a long time. So I expected him to say no. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I remember when it switched over.
Oh, wow.
I was like, what do you mean, switched over? I tried to get him to record, and he was... He said he was embarrassed for, he was afraid people wouldn't be able to understand. So which I think is silly. But he has given me permission to reiterate his story and retell it here. So his story is that he remembers, like, when he was about fourth grade, that up before fourth grade, they had always prepped for the new year, which is a big deal in Japan. Like, same thing, a little bit different traditions, a little somewhere between, like, the Korean and Chinese traditions. And yeah, so that they would prep for that holiday in February. And he totally remembered that always happening in February because it wasn't near Christmas. It wasn't near January 1st. It was always in February. And then one day, like, in fourth grade, they announced that they were switching it at his elementary school because they always had a big, you know, festival through the elementary school, that they would be switching it to January 1st. Mm. And I'm like, And I'm like, Dad, how do you remember that? Because he barely remembers anything from when he was a kid. He's always like, I don't know. But he says he clearly remembers this one because he found it really strange. Like, you can't just move a holiday. That's really weird, right? Because it's associated with the moon. So how would you just move Lunar New Year to a new day? And he told me that he distinctly remembers a conversation with his father where he was having his dad explain to him why this change was happening. His dad explained to him that in other parts of Japan, because, like, my dad grew up in the absolute countryside, like one of the most rural places in Japan you can never go to. But that in the countryside, they were still celebrating Lunar New Year. But in the cities, they had already switched over a long time ago because Japan adopted the Western calendar in, like, the 1830s or 40s, something like that.
Oh, wow.
And so even though they were saying, hey, it's January, February, March, they were, like, it slowly changed
older
over.
Older traditions died.
The rural places were the last ones to give up the tradition and that they gave it up because of that whole quote-unquote modernization right after World War II and trying to, like, belong to the modern world. And so my dad just remembers it switching.
Fascinating.
That's really interesting.
And so, you know, in Japan they have their own things. We make mochi, you know, by hand with these, like, big wooden hammers and stuff like that. So it's like days of prep. And so I just find it really interesting because I totally question my dad. Okay, and the other thing that, like, kind of makes me a jerk is that I didn't believe my dad when he told the story. I was like, what? Because my mom's family, like my other side of the family, like they didn't remember ever having like Lunar New Year. Granted, they were all here, but like that was never in their mind. Mm-hmm. And so I made my dad go onto this group chat that he has. I don't know if you know the Asian like app. It's called Line. Like a lot of people in Asia use it.
Yeah.
And so he still talks to people from his rural village, and they're all in this group on Line.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I was like, you asked the Line group, and you can't be the only one
who
remembers this. Okay, he calls me back 5 minutes later. He's like, nobody remembers. I'm like, what?
Are you sure he's not just making it up if he's the only one that remembers?
I mean, he was a really little kid when this happened. And now he's like, hey, Jenna, even if my friends remember, they're all like in their 70s. And then they all said, oh, she needs to have someone even older who won't remember. But I believe my dad about this one because, you know, that's how things
I
go, right?
It.
Traditions hold on in the rural places. And so I was like, don't you think that's weird that you like disassociated from the lunar calendar? And he's like, whatever, you just got to modernize. Like, and it made me sad. Because, okay, I'm almost done with my rant here. I was sad because as a kid, I was really jealous of kids celebrating Lunar New Year. And I was like, man, I wish Japanese people...
You just wanted the red envelopes.
No. One initially, yes. Because I remember I saw one of my friends buy a Nintendo.
Dude.
In the 80s.
That's with pretty tight.
And I was like, what? Because I knew there were red envelopes, but I didn't realize it was like... bank in there for many. I mean, I know for a lot of people it wasn't, but like for a few of my friends, like that was like that they didn't have birthday presents, they didn't get Christmas presents, they got this like beautiful
the one
red
time.
Wow.
And when I saw my friend get the Nintendo, I was like, oh my God, my family, we need to sit down and have a chitty chat. But yeah, and so I was jealous just because all the other Asians, at least in my school, had this thing in common. That they were all getting together with their families, and it was like, the Asians. And then I was like, we do ours on January 1st. Mm. Somehow I felt less Asian and like more assimilated. And so when I was little, I felt proud about that because, right, I was like always wanting to be white. Mm-hmm. But then when it came to like wanting to associate with Asian people, I felt like really sad.
Well, you're welcome to join my family's New Year celebration this year.
Yeah!
We can all go to Salem together.
Yay.
Well, because it kind of, this whole thing, like with talking to my dad, it really brought something to mind that we had put on our Pacific Underground post where when we had been asking people to send in their stories, one of the prompts we gave was like, what are you doing to decolonize your Lunar New Year? Of which honestly, okay, so I wrote that post. Honestly, I did not have a lot of ideas about what that meant. It was more like, I wonder if somebody will have an answer to that. And so I guess that was when I sort of thought myself like, oh yeah, that there is that aspect that people start to, that's one kind of sign of like kind of losing your Asian identity. Like in Japan, it's like, oh, well, let's go into the quote unquote like modern calendar. So people will think of us as good and like Western.
Less threatening.
Yeah, less threatening. Like let's take our lunar holiday and arbitrarily
change
celebrate it on,
in the 50s.
Yeah, on January 1st. And I don't know. And so there's a part of me that wants to like kind of reclaim that. And
but
like,
isn't that sort of like a sign of Chinese imperialism? Because I don't know if the Lunar New Year was necessarily forced upon the other Asian countries around China.
I know, like, historically... Okay, so I am not the best at Asian history. I'm, like, the worst. So here's my worst interpretation of Asian history. But I just know that Japan and China, you know, up until, like, modern history now, there's like, you know, this tension between the two countries. But historically, there was just a lot of cultural exchange.
That's my understanding, too.
Yeah, and that basically it was pretty friendly. Like, you know, I'm sure there's the tensions that there are like now, like that island belongs to us. No, that island belongs to us. Like, that's probably been around forever. But that whole cultural exchange was a pretty peaceful thing, and that, you know, China was pretty culturally dominant, and, you know, Japan wasn't like, you know, trying to push back against that because there was no like imperialism coming over to Japan. It was just like, hey, look at our pretty clothes. And here's our religion. And Japan's like, oh, yeah, yeah. We'll take that and make kimonos.
We'll take that, yeah.
And well, I'm sure it's much more complicated. And I'm sure there is strife. But, I've never really thought about that, like, whole Japan using the lunar calendar as something that was, like, imposed upon them versus, like, that was like what just was happening.
Adopting it seems like a good idea. Let's try it.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes sense. A lot of cultures around the world are based on the moon, right? It's either like the moon or the sun or the stars. And so, yeah. So maybe reclaiming that back, or maybe I'm just too old school Japanese.
Well, I thought our collective member, Kat, had a very interesting response to what does it mean to actually decolonize the Lunar New Year holiday, and what does it look like, and what does it entail? But she also thought about when holidays cross over from their home place of origin, and she also put the question out on her Slack channel that, does anyone know of an interesting trends or new traits that the holidays acquire, especially for API communities? So I definitely find it interesting that in a lot of isolated API communities that are small, that Lunar New Year has become the Asian holiday. I kind of like to equate it to Asian St. Patrick's Day, because that one day everyone is Irish. So I guess on the Lunar New Year, everyone can be Asian.
Ooh, well, that one just got dangerous, Tabby.
I mean, that's not,
you don't give out the Asian card just anybody.
Yeah, you gotta just give it out. But it is the day that, like, I guess it becomes like a pan-Asian holiday for Asian people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say that, yeah, the Lunar New Year card is extended to all the API communities. It's like, hey, even if you guys don't celebrate this, and culturally for thousands of years you haven't, today you get to.
Yeah.
And yeah, because it's an excuse to come together. And, you know, as everybody was talking about in their traditions, and as I think of like what Chinese New Year, Korean New Year, whatever you want to call it, Japanese New Year, it's often about the communities coming together. Like something I think is different between American New Year or like Western New Year, which is just like the ball drop, and what we think of as Lunar New Year, is that, you know, here in America, there isn't an emphasis on family. That's like Thanksgiving, right? Is like go home, see your family. That's where you travel. But New Year's is just like, all right, let's go to a party, you know? And it's more of an individualistic thing versus Lunar New Year tends to be when everyone goes home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about intergenerational connection.
It is like the biggest holiday in China. And China pretty much shuts down for a whole week because people are traveling back home to celebrate with their friends and family.
And so it makes sense. It makes sense to me that, like, we have this kind of pan-Asian designation now about Lunar New Year, where it's like, you know, a lot of us don't live near our families. We live in a country now where everyone moves away. And so it's nice. I think it's nice to be able to get together with like other Asian people, even if we're sort of celebrating like a genericized version, just because it is nice to be like, hey, we have a tradition of coming together, even if we can't come together with our families.
Yeah.
Let's come together. Kind of like what Justin was just saying, how they get together at a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, and it is nice. And because like one thing that I was thinking about was how much, as you're saying, like what Kat was talking about, how a holiday changes, right, when it comes here. And sort of like what, mind blank, sorry, I just read Justin Chin's name on a piece of paper. My brain just went, what? But what Justin was like talking about, you know, is how things change and you know, but it's like you're trying to kind of mimic what you had. And so it's really interesting when you are thinking about how what is a holiday that is about family getting together, and then when if you don't have family, like do you still, does it still have the same meaning? Like you can change the meaning, but inside, does it feel kind of strange because you know that tradition is embedded in family? But hey, that's the modern thing. Everything's always constantly changing.
Though, I guess the other thing is we often talk about like East Asian privilege. And I think this is a prime example of East Asian privilege about how this Chinese, I don't know if the Chinese invented it or were the first ones to celebrate it, but how it's sort of become like this pan-Asian celebration. And because I'm sure there are lots of other like smaller Asian communities, and they wonder, hey, why aren't our big celebrations celebrated as much as the Lunar New Year?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's... I guess this is when we need like a professor to come in and like talk to us about like the history of like why that dominates, you know, here in the United States. And I'm sure it has all to do with, you know, Chinese immigration and then like Chinatowns, and I'm sure there's some sort of like assimilation, thing or a prominence thing. Yeah. Okay. So next Lunar New Year, we'll get like four professors in here.
Yeah. As the only, sorry to tokenize you, but as the only non-East Asian, what are some big Filipino holidays?
In my family, the holiday that we would fly back to visit, you know, extended relatives at was Thanksgiving. And maybe that's just because we were a, you know, sort of white adjacent or Americanized Filipino family, but that's where my grandparents would always invite us to go back to their place in Vegas. And so most of my relatives live there, and we would have like the big feast thing. We didn't really exchange money or envelopes or anything like that, but and then Christmas was traditionally when the immediate family would get together. But yeah, so my experience with Lunar New Year was strictly on a sort of like pan-Asian, slightly watered down version with friends from college.
So, okay, something that's always associated with the Lunar New Year is the changing of the animal sign every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like as a kid, it was weird. I was told that I was born in the year of the rooster, mm-hmm. and I knew this. But I didn't associate it with a lunar calendar. I just thought of it as Chinese, like a Chinese calendar. Anyhow, I think it's really funny that I took a lot of pride in being a rooster, but I didn't like also then take the time to understand that it was associated with a lunar calendar and that I was actually following it myself. And hey, are any of us a dog? But yeah, because 2018 is the year of the dog, right?
No,
dogs?
I'm a snake.
Yeah. Ooh, you're a snake?
Yeah, I'm a rat. I lead the calendar.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, aren't you special?
I am. And I actually really love the story of how the rat... So, for those that don't know, I'm going to call it Chinese, because I think the Chinese were the people that invented it. But their zodiac sign is also a 12-year cycle. And the rat starts the cycle. And the story goes, so the ox is the following year. That the store hitched a ride on the ox, and very close to just before the ox crossed the finish line, and he was leading the race the whole time, the rat jumped off and then cheated and crossed the finish line. And that's why the rat leads the cycle.
So smart, the rat.
I know.
So smart. Well, we've been talking a lot about how you know, people are celebrating and how people enjoy it. But we also got some stories from a different perspective from people who are not here in the United States. Kat is one of our collective members, and she has a story about her association to Lunar New Year, and she thought of it as Chinese New Year, as someone who was growing up in the Philippines.
My name is Kat. I currently live in Portland, Oregon, but I was born and raised in the Philippines. I'm also one of the producers for Pacific Underground. There are people in the Philippines who celebrate Lunar New Year. That's primarily the Chinese-Filipino community. I'm not Chinese-Filipino, so the extent of my knowledge about Lunar New Year was A, that Chinese people say Kong Hei Fat Choi, B, maybe there was some red-colored clothing and lion dancing involved, and C, Dikoy, which is the name of a glutinous rice cake, and it's especially popular during the holiday. I moved to Singapore to study when I was 15, and Singapore is a Chinese-majority country, so it's a pretty major holiday there. we got two whole days off, so that was pretty nice for me as a student. I did learn more about the holiday when I was there. One thing I realized was how family-centered Lunar New Year was. Families would have these big reunions, and everyone would visit everyone else in their homes. I usually just spent the holiday relaxing, taking a break from school, or I would spend it with other friends who didn't celebrate the holiday either. So, other Filipinos or other international students, mostly. The main thing about Lunar New Year for me is that I associate it with the first time in my life that I was a quote-unquote other. I lived in Singapore from the age of 15 till I was about 19. And it might be a little better these days, but over 10 years ago, I not only felt that I was an other, I could also see that Filipinos were pretty much considered second class. I was also away from home and my family, and going to school there was stressful, so it was a tough time. But it was a very formative period for me in the end, and I do have very fond memories of Singapore, including of Lunar New Year, and the buzz and the flurry around the holiday. The music that gets played everywhere, like that one song that goes gong si gong si gong si ni. Sorry for my terrible rendition. But yeah, so if I had to boil it down, I guess the meaning of Lunar New Year for me is memories, otherness, and growing up.
Thank you, Kat.
Yeah, that was Kat. Thank you, Kat. Yeah, that I thought it was a really interesting perspective for her to share of like, oh yeah, watching other people, you know, that is are people who are coming to her country, mm-hmm. you know, and then like what it is to have a mixed community there and mm-hmm. to feel otherized too yeah. by it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very interesting. She also had her friend share with us. And her friend actually sent us a statement. And this is from Han Che Lu, originally from Malaysia, but now resides in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and is pursuing a PhD in history and Middle Eastern studies. And I thought this was just a really interesting perspective just because it's so many people's story, I feel like, that I hear when people share about like what Lunar New Year means to them now. So they say, I think over the years I have developed a love-hate relationship with Lunar New Year. To me, it used to be, and to a great extent still is, a time of family reunions, and this was nice to see growing up. But after I came to the U.S., it became something I had to remember by calling home to wish everyone a Happy New Year. Very often it's back to my day-to-day activities after that. I've only been home twice since coming to the United States. I often tell myself that it's probably good to let it stay this way. Ever since I had to come to terms with my sexuality, Lunar New Year has somehow served as a reminder that I will never fully be part of the Chinese culture or whatever culture I grew up in. It's a time when relatives, thankfully not my own parents, seem to acquire their newfound freedom in asking you if you have a partner, of the opposite sex, of course, when you're going to get one, etc. Worse still, Lunar New Year has a passive-aggressive mechanism to guilt-trip you for not getting married, the Ang Pao red packets. It was fun to receive it as a kid, but being 29 and still getting them, it feels as if people have this, quote, oh, you again kind of attitude when giving them to you. These days, I can't help but wonder if I got gay married one day, would people stop giving these to me? Would they accept my Ang Pao? I'd rather not receive them, to be honest. Being away doesn't stop the Ang Pao, though. These days, my mother collects them on my behalf from relatives who somehow feel obliged to give them, to be fair. I feel infantilized every time I receive news from my mother about how much I've, quote, gained. Yet somehow during these past 2-3 years or so, I've been feeling the Lunar New Year pull a lot more. Probably it's because I'm studying and researching a civilization/society and culture so distant to my own, and so I'm feeling some sense of cultural displacement. My colleagues don't seem to care one bit about where I'm from and my cultural or what my cultural background is, perhaps being able to feel part of a larger civilization / culture has a comforting effect. Heck, I even teared up when I watched the Chopstick commercial by CCTV. Plus, my partner's family is Italian Catholic, and so I fulfill my cultural obligations by participating fully in every holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, etc., involving his family. These events do sometimes make me feel culturally displaced, since he is not obliged to do the same for me because my family is not here. So maybe Lunar New Year has become something I try to cling on to ground my own sense of identity, as after all, the biggest festival in Chinese communities worldwide. But at the same time, seeing all these ang paos and how my relatives go about it back home is enough to repel me away from it. So yes, lots of tension with it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, that's so much of what it is, I think, for a lot of like API communities or a lot of API folks here in the United States, where it's like, what is it when the tradition is about going home? And then what is it when your tradition oppresses you and rejects you? How
that's
do you
interesting.
Yeah, but yeah. Then when you also are displaced and you want a sense of your own culture, so but that brings us to one of our last stories that were shared. We have Sun Lee again, and Sun, when he sat down with me, you know, he shared the story of what his Korean American rituals, you know, look like here when he was growing up. But then I also wanted to ask him about, like, well, what does he do now? So here's Sun Lee talking about how he views it now and how he views it for his daughter. So that's what you did as a kid. Do you still do that now?
No. The only thing that I do now is my daughter and I would typically go eat dokko. I'll either make it or we'll go out to eat and get it.
And so, like, do you think this is it important to you at all, like, to carry on the tradition?
You know, as I've gotten older, I debate with it back and forth. And, you know, it's a hard one. I think it's important to maintain those traditions. That way my daughter knows kind of her heritage and where she comes from. But then at the same time, living here in Portland, I really have no other Korean friends. And my sisters and I will talk about it. Like, recently we did this other traditional thing to honor your relatives who've passed away on their anniversary of their death. And it's a similar thing. But it's something that we've only recently started talking about and doing. I think after we all grew up and left the house, we just didn't do these things. But I think there's part of us that are kind of going back to wanting to do, or, yeah, not to forget our heritage. I mean, and we still speak half Korean, half English most of the time. Growing up, we were only allowed to speak Korean in the house. So, yeah, so I don't know. I think it's important. I just need to work on incorporating it, I think.
Have you taught your daughter about the crisp $1 bills she could be getting?
No, she does not know about this. Which, you know, I've never actually had her bow to me either. And I think that part of it, I mean, I guess when I think of it in a traditional way, it's not that big of a deal. But then, like, in my mindset, there's this weird, like, I'm the all-important one, and you must bow and show me respects, and which I don't know. I don't want her to think of me in that way, I guess. But I'm not sure. But, like, she should show me respect, I guess.
Yeah, I find that to be something I've kind of struggled with, especially, like, in a time where we're talking about, like, power dynamics and, like, toxic masculinity and stuff like that, you know, and it's, like, so many Asian cultures have those same things, right? Like, you know, where definitely the males are higher up in a family and stuff. And so I thought about that too. Like, how do you maintain traditions that are definitely, like, really old, but at the same time not pass on maybe that message that, like, you're less than?
Right. And I think, you know, yeah, it's because there's been times when I've told my daughter about, yeah, growing up being the firstborn male and the only male in my family, like, I had all the power, and I was able to tell my siblings to do whatever I wanted them to do, or anyone that was younger, anything that I wanted them to do, and they would essentially have to do it, which it's an odd dynamic. And obviously, in this day and age, like, I never would, I don't know, I don't have a son, but if I had a son, like, I would never, and he was happened to be older or younger, like, I wouldn't ever want my daughter to feel like she's less important, you know? But, you know, that is a big part of, I think, Korean culture and a lot of Asian cultures, is that how important the male is, and that power dynamic of it. You know, when I was recently in Korea, it seems like that's becoming less and less important. You know, a couple of my cousins there, there's no more, in my family bloodline, there's essentially no more males to carry on the name. And so there's a concern with the older generation that are in their 80s that there's no more, there's not going to be any more Lees. Whereas, like, the younger generation, which it's not that big of a deal anymore. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, one of my uncles was showing me, like, our family tree, which was going back to, like, you know, 1,000 years, and, like, knowing that, oh, me and my cousin, we're the end of this long book, you know. But, you know, maybe it'll change, and then I don't understand why females can't pass on the bloodline, in a sense, you know. So that was interesting to think about, was like, in our generation, it's not as important to have that male child. Like, my cousin has one child, that's a daughter, I have one child, that's a daughter, and there's no more, we don't want any more children.
Yeah, the joy of trying to figure out what to do with this now and how to pass it on in Asia, America. Always the question. Well, we have people who are also still, you know, trying to figure out how to reclaim it for themselves, or, you know, as you're saying, everyone's kind of, as you're Asian American, especially if you're kind of like you're talking about Jake, it's like, huh, I'm just sort of discovering this now. Well, one person, a friend of the show, Jason Chu, we've had him on before, he sent us a story about how he didn't actually start celebrating Lunar New Year until he was like 23, and he moved to Beijing because he didn't have it growing up, and so how it's something he's discovered as an adult. And we're running out of time here, so we'll just kind of start wrapping up our show, because after that, we're going to play a song for you by Jason Chu that's called Grandma's Kitchen, that's all about celebrating the Chinese New Year or Lunar New Year. So we just want to wish everyone a happy Lunar New Year, if that's what you celebrate. That's coming up on Friday, February 16th. Happy Year of the Dog if it's your year.
Ruff, ruff.
That too. And if it's not your animal year, supposedly it's good luck when it's not your animal year. So here's
when it is your animal
when
year.
When it is your animal year. So, yeah. No, actually, I've heard this is another thing when you get into it. It's like the different cultures believe different things when it's your year versus when it's not your year.
Oh.
So go with the culture that says that it's the best luck for you, I guess. So, yeah, here's Jason Chu, followed by his song Grandma's Kitchen, which is written, the music is written by Joe Kai, with words and vocals by Jason Chu and Olivia Tai. Thanks again for tuning in to Pacific Underground.
What's up, Pacific Underground listeners? It's Jason Chu at Jason Chu Music, and I'm here in Los Angeles. I grew up in Delaware, which was not a place that, you know, had a poppin' Asian American community. And so for me, honestly, Lunar New Year makes me think about when I was 24 and I was living in Beijing, China. I grew up, you know, I didn't speak Chinese. I didn't really celebrate Lunar New Year or any of these things. But then in college, I studied Chinese. I figured, you know, I had a mandatory language requirement, and I figured I might as well study something that helped me communicate with my grandmother. Because my whole life, you know, she would reach out to me in English and all that. But so I learned Chinese in college, and I wound up moving to Beijing to work for a couple years. And for those 2 years, every Lunar New Year, I was working for a company, we would have a retreat in Thailand. And I remember, you know, being on a plane from Bangkok airport, flying back into Beijing. And it was like a late night flight. And so I just remember looking down at the city, you know, when we were going in to the capital airport, and just seeing fireworks everywhere, like spread out for miles and miles all the way up and down. Like it looked like, you know, that version of, like this digital lit up version of the city. And you know, I'm older now. I'm not obviously living there anymore. I'm a musician in Los Angeles now. But every time that I think about Lunar New Year, or every time, you know, February rolls around, my mind flashes back to, you know, when I was a little younger, when I was living over there in Beijing. You know, I was young, I was single, I was flying around, and just how beautiful that city was when I saw all those lights. And you know, it's crazy because as a kid, I had nothing to do with Asia. And I think that for me, going back to Beijing after graduating was definitely a choice that I made to say, like, let me explore this culture a little bit. Let me try to connect to something, to tap into something that, you know, honestly, I discovered Chinese culture, Chinese approaches to life, you know, Confucianism, Taoism, family. Chinese culture was in everything, or parts of it was all around me growing up. But it took me going to China and spending those couple years there, learning about Lunar New Year, learning about fireworks, to embrace and accept. So that's my Lunar New Year story. That's my Chinese New Year story. I'm Jason Chu at Jason Chu Music. Thank you, Pacific Underground. Thank you, KBO listeners. Y'all have a beautiful day.
You know, say hello.
This is Grandma's kitchen. Pictures of the grandkids when we was infants. A herbal medicine for every symptom, from indigestion to bad intestines. No need to test it, Grandma suggests it. My family's dressed fashionably. Forget Paris, our style comes from PhDs. I mean, cell phone holsters, polos, jeans, comb overs, even khaki pants with the pleats. Uncle used to tease, I was a fat kid. Now when we at the table, he be like, rap kid. But Uncle's business is doing under average. But Chinese families know how to manage that. After dinner, you know he and Pop's gonna talk. And a check change hands between some grown-up folk. That's family law. When family calls, it's family's job to pick family up.
People working together to solve local problems.